rephrasing Kate. Off to one side, kneeling on the cool steps of the open-air hotel lobby, a Balinese woman twists bamboo leaves into little rectangular baskets. Her head bends over her working hands, her posture erect. The creamy soles of her feet curve up behind her in an inverted S. Kate watches from a distance and, curiosity piqued, approaches. "What are you making?" "Baskets, Mrs., for offerings." The weaver smiles slightly, and Kate notices her face seems vaguely threatening, yet her eyes are gentle and filled with a diffuse light. "Tomorrow we thank the gods for machines." "Machines? Machines. Cars, telephones, computers, all machines." She carefully folds several long leaves and snips the excess away with a pair of hand-forged shears. Sharp-edged bamboo confetti flickers to the ground. "May I?" asks Kate. The weaver presents a completed basket for inspection. Kate examines the intricate woven structure, observing the corners are faultless and the finishing cuts even, given its small size. "A remarkable sample. How long does it take?" "How long?" The weaver appears confused, places a half-finished basket under her arm, and holds her hands a few inches apart in an approximation. "I am forever rephrasing, making myself understood," thinks Kate. "No, how many minutes?" "Not long, Mrs." Kate wonders if she will wake to offerings on her bedside table in the morning. She is, after all, a computer waiting for physical information to analyze. To compensate, she fills her days with activities, runs assorted errands connected with her current decoration project, dinner with her husband if he is in the city, alone if he is traveling. She's on her own a great deal of the time, and lately has taken to talking to herself in the too quiet flat. "Another glass of wine, Kate?" she asks, and nods in agreement before pouring a second glass, and, more often than not, a third. "Patterns of three," thinks Kate. "Do you like making these baskets?" asks Kate. "Of course, I am blessed. Many people has no jobs after the bombings," says the weaver politely, even formally. Her eyes darken. The whole time her hands are braiding and folding bamboo. The two women size up one another. A volley of animal screeching erupts in the distance and breaks the tension. "Sacred monkeys, very naughty, they steal." The weaver disapprovingly shakes her head and waves in the direction of a deep, lush ravine. Gazing down at the heavy canopy of trees, Kate thinks it's unlikely that the monkeys would steal from her because she is invisible. She has no career unless trailing behind her husband constitutes as one. 2 international moves in 3 years, thinks Kate, and speculates about emerging technologies. Who would hire her as a geophysicist after 3 years out of the oil and gas industry? "You like dance?" the weaver says, suddenly returning to her earlier, friendlier tone. "I make arrangement. Dinner dance at restaurant. Tomorrow night dinner. Very nice to you." Without waiting for Kate's response, the weaver rises in one fluid movement and disappears into the back office. Kate is alone in the lobby. The small boutique hotel consists of a gathering of traditional thatched guest houses situated high on a hill above the monkey forest. Lush grounds climb up and down. Stone pathways and staircases disappear between the wooden houses. Car wheels crunch on gravel. Wondering if her driver has finally arrived, Kate strides over and peers down a steep flight of stairs to the driveway below. She spots several suitcases and overhears male voices speaking in Indonesian. Then a uniformed driver pushes the wrought iron gate open and a man enters. The man is carrying a large computer case across his chest. His step is precise, light, and he climbs easily. A tall man, his head is shaved. Halfway up the stairs, he glances up at Kate and grins. Kate fights the urge to grin back. He arrives on the landing. "Decker," he says, an American voice. "Pardon me?" "I'm Decker," he says. A striped shirt glares beneath a business jacket. Kate introduces herself back. The weaver emerges from the back office and warmly greets Decker with a smile. Again, Kate thinks that something about her face is menacing, and that's when Kate notices that something is missing from her smile. The points of her eye teeth are ground flat in an animalistic rite of adolescent passage. vice removed, soul reborn. The weaver bows deeply, then captures Decker's hand between her palms. Decker speaks to her in Indonesian. The weaver responds in English. Yes, Mr. Decker, is ready. You lose weight? I order black rice pudding for you tomorrow morning breakfast. Yeah, right. I'm eating too well. Laughing, Decker runs his hands over his firm stomach. Kate notices long, slender fingers and manicured fingernails. She thinks his touch would be surprisingly light for a man his size. Catching Kate's eye, he says, She makes me speak English every single time. What can I do? The weaver says, I practice English. Your English is good. It's my Indonesian that sucks, says Decker. Your Indonesian very good to you. How's the design course going? Decker asks the weaver. I build website. Mr. Decker, please. You look? Yeah, sure. Show me tomorrow. The weaver appears pleased as she works on various registration forms. Where are you from? Asks Decker in Kate's direction. Hong Kong. You? Same, same. Decker removes his jacket and rolls up his shirt sleeves. Kate notices a fishtail tattoo curving across one forearm, its iridescent orange scales shimmering with sweat. A crab scuttles across his other forearm and dives for cover beneath striped cotton. Who you here with? Asks Kate automatically. The big company that shall not be named, says Decker. Impatiently, he pats his suit jacket pockets, searching for and finding a rumpled package of Marlboros and a large metallic Zippo lighter. Ignored, thinks Kate, and turns away so she doesn't say something rude. Some days she can't believe she's the same person who mapped deposits and fault trends deep beneath the surface, who recommended major projects. These days she's offshored to the table with the wives. Kate grips her handbag tight until the handles pinch her fingers and reminds herself that she is a white woman in Asia, sexually redundant. Her driver finally arrives. Decker turns to Kate. Yeah, it's a 15-minute walk into Ubud, he says, a hard edge in his voice, roughened further by a steady stream of cigarette smoke. Through the monkey forest. It wouldn't kill you to walk that far, would it? Stop the car, says Kate, when she spots the large signpost announcing the monkey forest. After instructing her driver to deliver her packages to the hotel, she enters the gateway and walks into a wooded twilight. The jungle closes over her, and glancing up, Kate watches the long, slow sway of the treetops high above her. The heat is oppressive. Very little wind permeates the canopy. Signs indicating species are nailed to the occasional tree. Kate ignores them and moves downhill where a few tourists congregate around a large banyan tree. Hurrying, she avoids banana peels, rotten lettuces, and other unrecognizable food debris smeared into the pavement. A few monkeys squat along the stone walls. Arriving at the tree, Kate stops and watches several small silver-haired ones perched above. A larger monkey with an oozing gash on his flattened nose swivels his head in Kate's direction and stares unblinking at her for a long moment. His eyes are full of some emotion Kate cannot make out. All of a sudden, the monkey bares his teeth and hisses loudly, spit flying. Immediately, the other males jump, rebounding off branches and then drop to the ground. On the pathway, they scatter, circling one another, and a series of attacks and retaliations erupt. Off to one side, a baby monkey cries until one of the larger ones snatches his hand and drags him into the safety of the underbrush. Kate freezes for a moment and then escapes up the pathway. From a safe distance, she turns back and spots the wounded monkey sitting at the deserted base of the huge banyan tree. He stares intently after her. Kate walks back to the hotel as fast as possible in the stifling heat. Kate finds it difficult to fall asleep. There's no breeze to speak of, and the wind chimes on the veranda are silent. She tosses in her empty bed, and sometime after midnight drifts into a shallow sleep. Decker enters her dreams, lying below her in the wide hotel bed, thrusting up to meet her, and he tells her something important, and for some reason she cannot understand him. Pleasure clusters deep within, and she begins to orgasm. Decker laughs, and little purple and orange crabs crawl out of his gaping mouth, scrabble across the white sheets, onto the tiled floor, underneath the bed. Then the sound of a huge door slamming from somewhere deep inside the earth smashes against the still night. Awake and sweating, Kate lies in her bed, her heart galloping. The guest house sways, wooden beams creaking in an effort to keep up. Kate jumps out of bed and, standing on trembling floorboards, locks her knees in an effort to keep her balance. At the window, large branches are whipping back and forth, leaves snapping inside out. Several long moments pass before the ground settles into a static hum. An atmospheric heaviness presses down on her. The ravine rings, a cacophony of animal noises. The only sounds Kate clearly differentiates are peacocks screaming. Panicking, she rushes out the door, through the garden, and up steep stairs, across the spiky grass toward the now candlelit lobby. There on the lowest step of the lobby stands a uniformed security guard and Decker, quietly talking together in Indonesian. Their words rustle in the darkness. Decker turns toward her. "No worries," he says, his voice steady. A small tremor. "What magnitude?" "A small tremor. Nothing to worry about." The security guard says something and sweeps an arc of light over Kate. All of a sudden, she is acutely aware she is standing there in a flimsy nightgown, and her gaze slips, settling on a vague spot on Decker's broad shoulder. A flush heats her cheeks. Decker hands her an industrial-strength black flashlight. "Just in case you need it, Kate." "You remember my name?" She finds herself blinking back tears that she isn't expecting, embarrassed more by revealing her emotions than her body. "Yeah, sure," says Decker. Kate flees back to her guest house and reminds herself that it was a small tremor, a magnitude no greater than blowing a seismic charge in the field. The peacocks scream in the dark. At dusk, Kate sets out on foot for the dance performance. As she hurries up onto the main road, her heels grind in the gravel. She walks past several compounds surrounded by high stone walls. Moonlight shines off the glass shards embedded along the tops. A radio plays. Kate speculates what else lies beyond the walls. When the moon goes missing, she wishes she'd brought along Decker's flashlight. Kate arrives at the restaurant. The sprawling restaurant is comprised of raised pavilions scattered around a central courtyard. Each building contains two or three tables, and Kate's is no exception. A table of six, glasses raised in some kind of celebration next to hers, speaking some Northern European language, she thinks. Near the end of dinner, a large stack of firewood in the courtyard is doused with an accelerant and lit. The wind surges, and Kate catches a whiff of gas. The emerging stars hang low in the soft, dark sky, casting their shadows as if double exposed. Kate thinks about how unfamiliar the stars appear. Their light is diffuse and yellow, unlike the hard white stars back home. A flickering torch appears in the rice fields, then another, and yet another. The men materialize behind the torchbearers, their heads bobbing. Single file in two columns, 100 men traverse the narrow footpaths between watery fields. Hoarse and raucous, the frogs announce the men passing. The long lines converge, and the men, young and old, approach the whirling bonfire. Bare-chested, they wear black and white checked sarongs and a black head wrap with a single red hibiscus tucked in the folds. The men sit cross-legged, pressed close to one another, forming a tight concentric circle around a small stage. Flames leap and skin glistens in the firelight. The men wait with eyes downcast. Even the sky holds its breath. The narrator calls and the story begins. The men sway in unison, chanting, "Kachak, kachak." A heavily jeweled princess with a sideways stare edges into view and gazes over her shoulder at the demon king, who is stalking her from the rice paddy beyond. The glittering princess is caught and imprisoned on a golden throne, and, off in the distance, her prince roars in outrage. The chorus responds by leaning in, beating their chests and calling louder and louder, "Kachak, kachak!" Then the monkey god materializes, his body smeared with ashes. He embarks on a rigorous journey to rescue the princess. Kate cannot take her eyes off the monkey god as he celebrates. He leaps and staggers through the men. Dozens of ornate silver bracelets band his upper arms, forcing his arms up into the air. With heavy eyebrows and contorted mouth, he brandishes a sword and flashes messages to the night sky. The chorus leans in, reaching for him, and the monkey god bounds away, his tail jerking. Then the chanting fractures into a frenzied counterpoint. Kachak, kachak, kachak! The chorus disintegrates. Several men fall to the ground exhausted. Others wander the stage in a trance, back and forth. No patterns emerge in their erratic movements. Kate calms herself by staring into the roaring bonfire. Later that evening, overlooking the ravine, Kate thinks about living in Hong Kong. She wonders where her husband is, what he is doing alone in a city full of beautiful women that, for some reason, he never mentions. Then again, there are a number of things she never mentions. Granitic extrusions, she thinks, and realizes that, even though she's living on the hardest bedrock in the world, she isn't on solid ground. Kate turns back to garden pathways curving around the swimming pool that glows like a stratigraphic time slice. A lighter flares and a cigarette dances in the darkness. The wind whispers, "Kachak." A striped shirt floats toward her. Decker. "Why are you here, Kate?" "To get away." "You?" "Trying to be good." "What do you do?" Decker exhales a lazy O. "To be good?" Decker laughs. "No, your job." "I used to be a geophysicist." "You?" "Communications," says Decker. He pulls a beer out of an ice bucket he stashed beneath a poolside table and pushes a slippery can into her empty hands. "Tell me about your job, Kate." "I analyze seismic maps and search for patterns underground. Find oil and gas deposits," says Kate and takes a seat at the table. "How cool is that?" Decker settles into a chair across from her, leans back and stares into the soft darkness. "Look at the stars. I can't remember the last time I saw so many. You never see any in Hong Kong." "I can't read the constellations," says Kate, smoothing her skirt over her knees. "Underground formations are my specialty." "There are star charts. You like maps, don't you? You better get on it, Kate," says Decker. Kate laughs. "Jesus, it's hot." Decker removes his shirt, exposing a smooth, hairless chest, and his tattoos emerge. On one arm, a reddish-gold carp climbs a waterfall up his flowering shoulder, and on the other, crabs climb up into cherry blossoms. A green-scaled coil curves around one side of his waist and goes back where it came from. Kate speculates about the creature that lives on his back. "Your tattoos are remarkable." "What do you see?" Decker carefully folds and drapes his shirt over the arm of his chair. "Transformation," says Kate. "Do you map out your tattoos?" "I figure it out as I go." "Does it hurt?" "You get used to it." "The colors remind me of waveform classification." "What's that?" "Images of formations, anomalies specifically." "That's me, anomalous." Decker stares at Kate with an impenetrable look that is both hard and soft. "You must be good at your job, Kate." "I used to be." A lizard skitters across flagstones. "What are you doing here, Kate?" asks Decker. "I told you." Getting away from the bright lights of Hong Kong. He considers the burning tip of his cigarette and grimaces. "Same, same. I've developed some bad habits." "What kind?" "Bar girls. There are none in Ubud, thank Christ," says Decker as if he wishes it wasn't the case. He pauses a moment, then continues, "Listen, Kate, You got to be careful in Asia. You don't want to spend all your time hanging around with a bunch of Thai ties, getting into all kinds of trouble when their husbands are out of town. So you've heard. Yeah, you could say that. Decker laughs and tosses back his beer. Quiet stretches between them. Then Decker asks, "How many men you screwed since you got married, Kate?" The lizard freezes on the railing, fixed in silver light, eyes glittering like amphiboles. "Come on, you can tell me. I just admitted I'm addicted to bar girls, for Christ's sakes." Decker taps cigarette ashes into the garden. The tendons along his wrist and hand are taut, well-defined in the moonlight. Kate thinks she has arrived here for some reason. Here at the pavilion on the grounds of this small hotel. Here on the faulted ground above a deep ravine. Natural fractures enhance permeability. "Patterns of three," says Kate. "What?" "Three. I've slept with three men." "Affairs?" "One night stands. If you could call them that," she thinks. "They never stayed the night, exactly." She didn't have to ask them to leave. They simply dressed and walked out of anonymous hotel rooms, pulling the doors shut behind them, above a thick shelf of rhyolite. "You know, it's funny," says Decker quietly. "All that time I spent with bar girls, what I craved most was a regular conversation with a woman. A couple of months ago, I figure I'm ready to go on a regular date with a regular woman, and the weirdest fucking thing happened. I discovered I can't talk anymore. I mean, I can't connect." "I'm sorry," says Kate, and wonders to whom she's apologizing and for what. "Yeah, give me a month or two and I'll get over myself. Meantime, night's a puppy." Decker removes the remainder of his clothing. He turns his back and a scorch-eyed, winged green dragon emerges, tail writhing in a sea of half-finished waves. Mesmerized by incomplete waveforms, Kate searches for stable patterns and finds none. Geological confusion, thinks Kate. Decker dives into the glowing pool in a single fluid moment, and as he swims, the outline of his body wiggles one way and then the other.